Howdy, everybody. Bob Tallman for No Spin Rodeo. No politics, no BS, just hard-hitting news and rodeo commentary from two of the most trusted sources in our sport. Kendra Santos, Tommy Joe Lucia. Listen up. Here we go.
Well, happy Veterans Day to everybody. On November 11th, it's Veterans Day. This is No Spin Rodeo. I'm Tommy Joe Lucia, joined by the First Lady of Pro Rodeo Journalism, Kendra Santos. And we have a spicy guest we'll introduce you to a little bit in a couple minutes or two. Welcome to our show. Thank you, all you No Spinners, for joining us. If you're listening to us on the podcast, you might want to watch YouTube every now and then on Tuesday night, because you're going to want to see the expressions of the dude in the third box over there. He's easy to piss off, and I'll accomplish it some way. Good morning, Kendra. Before we introduce Alan, how are you today?
I'm doing very well, thank you. It is very warm here. There's across this country right now, there's all kind of different weather, because I'm hearing dry here, cold here, hot here. So all good.
Well, we also have joining us, there's a handful of people in my mental Rolodex that are guys that I know will take it the way I meant it, will tell me if I'm wrong, and that I could give my last dollar to or my grandbaby to, and they would take care of them. Truth here. And that would be Alan. After 30 years of us both being around, Alan Jordan, and he stands for everything that's credible in our sport. And I can't think of a better person to be on No Spin Rodeo podcast than the infamous but not so famous Alan Jordan. Hello, Alan. How are you today?
Hello. Hello. Good.
Oh, he's going to get shy.
Yeah, he's going to play shy.
Not.
No, he's the real deal, and we're happy to have him on. So, Kendra, let's start off the top of the show with a little bit of things. All I'm going to say is, listen, the older I get, the more grateful I am to live in the greatest country in the world. And we can sit there and talk about the government shutdown, and we can lean into our rights or our lefts or all this other bullshit. But the truth is, go to South Africa. Go to some places where life sucks. We get to do what we want to do, eat what we want to eat, vote, whether it counts or not. You still get to vote. You get to put it in the box or mail it in or jump on the bus when they haul you up there or whatever. And I just, the reason for this is for, and I have to say, I can't tell you how indebted I am to the service members, the administrations, frankly, the people that have to decide whether to put our service members in harm's way, and all of the people that have given us the most wonderful country in the world to live in. You know, this was, it started on November 11th, and it was the anniversary of World War I in 1918. It was originally called Armistice Day. I don't even know what armistice means, but it sounds pretty cool. And then I think Woodrow Wilson or one of those old presidents changed it. But I have got to say, and I had to take a little time, if you serve or have served or in a family of someone that served, both running our country or in the military, I can't thank you enough for giving me an opportunity to raise my family, have grandbabies, and live in the best freaking country in the world. Done. Amen. Off my box.
It's true. And I was just going to mention before we get rolling, talking about judging things, all things judging, which I can hardly wait. We just celebrated the class of 2025 at the National Rodeo Hall of Fame in Oklahoma City over the weekend. And it was an outstanding event. The attendance more than doubled, which is heartening, since last year. And with today being Veterans Day, besides saying congratulations to all, every member of this year's class, two of them, rodeo clowns, John Taylor, these people will go back to Alan's childhood because they do mine too. John Taylor is a Vietnam veteran who served in the U.S. Army, and Larry Klayman in the U.S. Marine Corps. And those guys were funny.
Oh, they're hilarious.
And I don't know how many people, John Taylor and Snort, and then Larry Klayman and his chimp Toto.
Well, they John were Taylor funny because Snort. Toto was liable to bite someone's ear off. So when Klayman was out there with Toto, you didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, I the funny thing was all of us behind the chutes wondering what was going to, how bad Toto was going to whip Klayman's ass before they got out of the arena.
Hey, I seen Toto climb a tree at San Bernardino with a piece of baling wire. He's trying to whack everybody's head off with it. And Trav Caldwell Sr. had to climb up there and get him out.
Well, the other day, Oat and I were in Missouri, and we went to the Klayman's place, and they're like, yeah, that's Larry's house, and that's Toto's tree right out front, you know? And so, but Snort, Alan, do you remember, like, okay, here would come John, who's like 4'10", maybe?
Yeah.
And he, old Snort, and...
Well, 4'10", both directions, vertical and horizontal.
Yes, yes.
Fair. And then here we would come on Snort, and then the horses jumping snorting. And, I mean,
they went every
hilarious.
Direction. Every direction. Yeah, so, they hated him.
It was wild. Good. Okay.
And he had an illustrious career with saddle horses at the NFR, too, right?
Well, he hired me when I was 15 at Oklahoma City to help him with the saddle horses.
Really?
Really?
Yep.
Yep. I, for decades, was in those production meetings in Sean Davis's office at the Thomas & Mack, for sure. Yeah. He's just a nice man.
Very nice
and
man.
His voice is funny. He's hilarious. But anyway, it's fun to see these guys get their due. And big congrats also to Chad Berger, Joel Edmondson, H.P. Evitz, the original King of Cool Reachers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Alan, Bobby Goodspeed, Wiley McRae. The late Wiley McRae and the late Neil Gay, Charlie Throckmorton. This year's Tad Lucas Award winner was Larry D. Guy. And this year's Ben Johnson Award winner was Hud Hudson. And apparently they reenacted the old hotel room parties, all-nighters. And those guys, they've got to be in their 70s, right? The Trace Moores and Jim Pratts and all these guys. And I guess they just... hung it on T-Bone Clark, kind of guys. They were all there and with guitars. And anyway, so good for everybody. Anyway, let's go because I am so looking forward to this. So for those who don't know Alan forever, like we have Bulldogger, Bull Rider, very long time judge, trophy husband to Jolie Lauderette Jordan.
Thank you for seeing that.
Who just won Brawley Barrel Race 30 years after winning it the first time in 1995 over the weekend.
And she's just as credible, and her crap is on target, everything she does.
Yes. And she, in the last few years, it's been fun because she'll be somewhere, she'll be being a timer and then she'll be doing, you know, she'll be doing reporting and whatever. Anyway, she wears a lot of hats just like her husband, but cool. So, the elite level judge in the PRC and the PBR, and there's, I don't know a more respected judge in our industry over a very long time than Alan Jordan. And like us, he is a straight shooting truth teller. So,
I want to ask him some questions real quick about it. So is it true? Was it your family or did you started out with a stock contracting company? Was that your family or did you work for him?
Yes. I was a little kid and I started out with RSC with Bob Cook and Nancy Cook. And then when I got to about, I think it was my seventh grade, I just moved up there and lived with them. And I'd see my mom and dad at the rodeos.
And RSC, as this dates back to my childhood too, RSC stand for Jack Roddy, Jack Sparrick, and Bob Cook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that's cool is I'm pretty sure, now correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, because I heard this and I think I read it. I'm pretty sure Alan flanked at the NFR three or four, maybe five times before he was 18. Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
That's badass. That's badass.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep. It was. Yeah, it was good.
And that's Oklahoma City days. And then you went into bull riding, which Kendra talked about.
Yeah.
And here's what's funny. I was with, well, you know how Cody Lambert and I tie yep. up a lot. And we got into a passionate discussion about your bull riding somewhere. And and Cody was telling someone about how good a bull rider he was. And I couldn't help myself, but I pointed to you. You were over there by the buck and chutes. I don't know where we're at. And I said, "No, Cody, that guy was a good bull rider. You were just
You're
okay.
such an ass."
No, oh, my, but this guy rode Oscar multiple times. He rode, what was the bull of Rosser's? Wasn't it Rosser's that you rode the bull in California? I saw something about that. That was unbelievable.
Yeah, that was the Brennel bull he had. They hadn't been ridden for a while. Yeah. And I rode him like twice. And then I did a movie deal with him. They brought him down there on Hunter. It was Renegade. And then I had to get on him and hang up to him and then get thrown in the pen with him. It was all stunts. You know, he wiped me out. He was the winner.
But I mean, you're talking about a guy, just so you know, that did it first and now judges. And, you know, this guy's got a 96 in his ledger off of Oscar. Like, you don't get marked 96. Now, there were some guys that got marked hundreds and shit like that didn't belong.
Yeah, we're not going to go there.
Well, we probably will before it's over.
That's on my list. Absolutely. Yes. But interesting combination bull rider and bulldogger, and pretty large bull rider, but a handy bulldogger.
Thank you.
How in the world? That combination is very unusual, unless you're a Linderman candidate. Well,
speaking of the Linderman deal, when I had my card and I was riding bulls, you could never get traded, be up the same time in the bulldogger. I mean, you could never be up at the same time if you're riding bulls. So I had to lay off the bulldogging for a while. And then if I knew I was going to just go to one rodeo or something, I could enter two events, you know. But I had to take the heat from my father all the time, too, because he's always wanting me, why don't you enter the bulldogging? So I'm entering the bull riding, you know, that kind of story back and forth.
You couldn't cross event, buddy, or whatever.
No.
No.
I guarantee you I could enter Denver or one of them. There's just not a chance in hell you could be up anywhere close together.
But you're pretty big in stature for a bull rider, right?
Yeah. Size perspective.
I mean,
yeah, size-wise and tall and, you know.
Yeah.
And with the guys, they're kind of getting bigger nowadays too, you know.
They're getting a little longer, a little more.
Yeah.
That Brady Fielder and these guys, they're getting
beautiful.
A little more Jerome Davis.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the Owen Washburns and guys like that had some good size and could really, really, really ride.
Well, Owen could really, really, really ride and really, 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 really get thrown off.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he either made an unbelievable ride or I was trying to figure out what is wrong with you.
Yeah.
Sorry, Ken. Yeah.
No, great.
Anyway,
great
this person. Guy's accomplished. I didn't know. I thought I heard that he bulldogged, but I didn't know that. I knew he rode bulls. And then another one of my faves is Growney. Didn't you work for Growney?
No, I actually just ordered him around because when they bought their company, they bought our company. And so I was kind of in the transition of him getting used to the stock and stuff, and I'd flank at all the good rodeos. I'd go, or I could be entered, and I'd flank the bucking horses, you know, especially when it's time to pick for the NFR. He'd have me flank like Salinas and San Jose and them rodeos back then. And we were mean to John. He had it coming.
Well, to preface our shoot around here, are you a free agent these days, or do you have an actual title?
I am head of officiating for the PBR.
Oh, corporate, big boy.
Whatever.
Salary, all that kind of great stuff. Congratulations.
Yes, yeah.
And you also on your resume ran the PRCA's judging program.
No, never. If it was, it'd have been a lot better than it is now.
You moved to Colorado Springs at one time. In which job were you?
I was the head of the stock contractors. That title. That, you know, I represented them and by the rules and all that. So that was my title.
So does that job no longer exist?
I don't have much interaction with them. So I don't know if it does or not.
Okay.
Well, yes. I think they've changed the...
But you were a forever PRC judge for how long?
I'm going to date myself. I was entering the bull riding. It was my very first year, 1977, my rookie year. I go to Livermore when Livermore was good and they needed a judge. So they drew me out. I didn't want to draw out. They drew me out. Hugh Chambliss made me judge. And, you know, first year guys were not allowed to judge. And all I did was cuss him for that because I had a good bull in the bull riding, you know. he never lived that down. And that's how it all started there then Jack Hannum, every time he needed a judge, you know, he'd call and say, hey, you got to go here and that. I'll leave you in the bulldogging, but you got to get out of the bull riding. So basically, they kind of forced me out of the bull riding.
Boy, but you were an actual full-time PRC judge for
20-something years. I was hired as one of the full-time guys, yeah.
Okay. I, just to kick this party off, I saw our Sean Davis, Hall of Fame saddle bronc rider and forever NFR general manager of the weekend in Oklahoma City. And I asked him what he thinks of using quarter points at the NFR this year for the first time. And his take was, we have plenty of points to work with already. We just need to use the spread more. What do you think about that?
Well, I think, and I've been there when they rounded up or whatever they did, they didn't use them. If you use your spread, just like he said, and get your placings correct, you know, it's good. But anymore with our athletes and our livestock getting so consistent, it really helps because I do these evaluations every week after these bull ridings, and we have films to look at and all that. And the ABBI started using the tenths. We've been doing the halves and all that already in a PBR, but we're going to start using tenths in all our events now. And ABBI has been using them forever, and it's been good. You can really hash it out, and it breaks up all them splits and stuff.
Okay, but are you saying in 2026 the PBR is going to go to judging in tenths?
Yes, and that's okay. in rider and bull.
If 100 points is already a big enough spread, then why are you in favor of using tenths?
Go ahead. I look at it as, and I go, because you'll see, like Fort Worth, Texas, 32 performances. And it runs so long that as a judge, you can get lost. Pretty soon you look back and you have 589s winning the go-round. And, you know, and if you go back and look at them, if you can split them up from 89 and 2/10, you know what I'm saying? It just gives you more room. That's what I like about it because it's
pretty tough. This will be interesting because I'm going to try to get Kinder to participate in this, but I'll tell you this: at the Utah Days of 47 Rodeo this year, I felt sorry for those guys.
I got it
in
right here.
In the bronc riding.
I got it right here.
Yeah, because now, and I've never said I'm the judge. I've produced a million events, and I can usually look from just being around this my entire life and say the score, right? Now, but in the bronc riding, Kendra, my point is you might have a big spread of points. But in order to do that, correct me if I'm wrong, Alan, in order to do that, you've got to start out marking the high guy too high and the low guy too low to give yourself that spread when the horses and the talent are so concentrated, especially in the PBR, where there's six or eight for sure bulls that if you've only given 1 point, they belong in that 1 point. So how do you reward a guy, right, Kendra? So I agree, but I think you'd really have to skew the thing. And I see these judges all the first performance, I always yell out to them, do you have any balls? And they get mad at me because they're always that first ride or the first perf. And Alan can tell me if I'm tight. They got they're kind of setting their boundaries and they're scared because they got to live in that the rest of the game, especially when you do 32 performances at Fort Worth. Am I wrong on that, Alan?
No, I mean it was tough, but if you get and a lot of these guys don't have the opportunity to be in them long perfs like that to recognize it. Does that make sense there? I mean,
well, what does make sense to me about it is ultimately all that really matters is that you place guys in the right order and decide who gets the money. So what does say if you have a 32 perf rodeo or whatever, the cool part is about it, I suppose, that makes sense to me is, well, if you really can go back in your mind 30 perfs and say, well, this one tonight was just that smidge better than that one 30 perfs ago or whatever. It gives you a chance to go back and place them in like, right?
Yes. Yeah. And you learn by it. You get to learn by it because just like El Paso, Harry Rose and I went to El Paso one year and it was a long rodeo back then. And same thing after rodeo, you go over and look at them sheets. Okay. What was that guy in the first performance? You know? Oh yeah, he was supposed to be this guy that we have hired tonight, you know. So it's all mindset, you know, is what it really is. And this opportunity. Go ahead.
Well, for people who don't know, you guys have a chance to go back later and adjust the scores. 30 perfs later.
No. In the old days, they used to try that every now and then, but no. Once you turn them books in, you're done.
For the day.
For the day. Yeah.
You can't.
Except they were able to do it at Salt Lake this year for some reason. I don't know why. But the end of that discipline, that's supposed to be it.
Okay. Here's the confusion. Here's what just I didn't say it right. Sometimes a score will change after a perf. It's only because the math was wrong.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
the ball and the guy was added incorrectly. That's why it changes.
Okay. Or they say they meant to put a half point on there and that period is actually a half point because they realized that they screwed up. Because that's the one thing I was going to bring up. I'm flipping my argument around, Kendra. I completely like quarter points and tenth of points in the PBR, and I'll tell you why. The flip side of the flip side of that is there's too many judges that don't know what they're doing. So giving them more places isn't necessarily going to mean we have the right winner. You got to know what the flip you're doing to divide 1 point into quarters or tenth. Like you've got to be good. You've got to notice that you're going to give that bull 2/10 of a point because he was smart enough to turn back as soon as he saw that guy loose. And most of these guys don't even see that. Honestly, right, Alan? They don't even recognize.
They're not the recognizing. That the
world, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I'll give you an example. I watched a film from the circuit finals from over there the other day, and I'm looking at the sheets, and one guy's got the rider 2 points over, and the other guy's got him a half over, and the guy that has him a half over is right because it's flopping and popping and making him look. That's no control. And it's just wild, bad moves, you know, and then they get falling into it. Pretty soon that bull comes up too. They'll pick the bull up saying, boy, that bull's really bucking, you know. It's kind of a masquerade.
Those guys like Charlie Sampson, there's a lot of guys out there that want a lot of money because they rode like that. And I'm not knocking Charlie.
No,
They gave the bull 2 points that if you put Razor on him, it was a totally different score.
You hit two perfect points right there because Jim Sharp, I remember – when I was judging and he was riding, you didn't want to watch Jim Sharp. You better watch the bull because he's going to make the bull look easy. If you're just watching him, you're going to go, oh, that's 84 points. Not really. If you watch what that bull did.
And there was always so much talk about like Chris Shivers, how he could get some extras out of his free hand, right?
Yep.
Free arm and different things like that.
But you can enhance the ride by beating them to the punch and stuff like that. But this out of control swinging and moving and getting draped over their head and stuff doesn't work for me, you know.
What about the feet in the bareback riding on both sides of the neck?
I hate it.
Both feet on one side of the neck.
Doesn't work. I seen win a lot of money with a guy gets a spurt over his neck. That's a lack of control. You know, and then I do believe that I could be talking on my ass on this, but I think these riggings are set nowadays where they can, it happens more often because they've got a good seat and their feet are up higher. So if that horse does anything like that, they'll come over, you know, which they don't really dock that much for it, where I did, you know, I took a lot of heat for him. But no, man, you had your foot on the other side. At least the other guy had a nice control ride.
Right. This is completely out of order, but I feel like it happens every year at the NFR where you have a pretty savvy crowd of hardcore rodeo people. And man, night after night, there might be one judge who's like 3, 4, 5 points different from everybody. And and everybody's scratching their head. How does that happen?
Well, I'll just tell you.
I guess it doesn't matter, for one. If that person's consistent, it doesn't matter.
I'll just give you an example. I was judging the bareback riding one year there. I'm trying to think who I was with. And the horse comes out, and the only person that can see the right foot's me because he circles right over here. And all them other guys are on their side. He makes a splendid ride over here. It was Russ Bigelow. And on my side there, he's getting jerked down. He had hell getting around there. I'm 6 or 8 points below all through the rest of them. So it's a lot of camera angles.
Clayton.
Okay. But that's it's a lot of times it's views in that.
Could legitimately happen and not be a problem.
I'll tell you, there's a lot of guys, like, especially we're judging off the back of the chutes now and stuff like that. And I remember when we first started that back when PBR, it was tough because you didn't know. You had to kind of look down and see if they're bucking, because you're getting it right there and you're feeling it all. And then all of a sudden you look up the video and go, oh my God, you know, he kicked about that high. You know, so views, you get better at it, but views make a lot of difference.
Well, I have a question. How many, and Kendra may know this, but you, when you were judging at the NFR, how many judges? I heard they've got 12 or 14. Is that because they rotate them, or?
They try to use them they'll use the guys in the strong events. You know, and they'll try to move them around and stuff like that. That's the reason why they're. And then, you know, when Clint was the boss, I think we added 2 more judges, I think, for a year or so there that was off the back, you know, instead of the guys out in the arena. We were also in the mix.
Do the contestants have any input on who judges the NFR?
No. That's thank
there
God.
There was a time.
It was bad.
There was a time.
They let them pull their like the bareback riders, and they give them a list, but it doesn't, when it's all said and done, it's still the judge's boss, the boss of the judges that picks them. We give you this example all the time. If the football players and coaches want Tommy Joe because he don't call holding, they're going to have him there, you know? So it's kind of, it doesn't work.
I gotcha. Okay.
We'll get into the judging a little more, but I want to highlight. So Kendra and I have had this conversation about professional rodeo keeping up with technology. Correct me if I'm wrong, because I don't know if this is true or not. I went to the team's finals and was there the whole time. Are they starting the clock with AI?
Yes.
See, Kendra, they're starting the clock with AI, because Kendra and I have this conversation all the time. Yeah, this conversation all the time about the timed events, about, you know, and I'm always saying, look, the technology's there to not miss the barrier, right? The technology's there to not have to look at an orange flag 65 feet down the arena with a drunk with a beer in front of the timer. But we just refuse in rodeo to go there. So I'm just saying, share with us some of the progress. Because you got to give it to the PBR. They are ahead of the game.
They are very much so. So we are the deal on the buck and shoots. On camera, we'll start our clocks. In human reaction, that bull's always that far out. So they put up the AI deal at the top. And there, I said, there's no way in hell it'll work. No way. I mean, I said, no way. I'm Pete Ham, it worked, and it works good. It's more consistent than human. And then if it does have a foul, like if the bull jumps up in the corner every now and then, it'll start it, you know, it'll break the plane. And then we can go back with our replay and say, hey, we're going to check the time. And what was it? Ammo. Yeah. So it's right. It's Nat's ass. It's a lot better. And you're right. The PBR is so ahead of it. Just like we got 14 cameras in the replay and we're moving that again. We're doing some different things there, but I mean, it's a hell of a machine that's working.
Well, even with 14 cameras, I noticed this at the team finals, even with 14 cameras, there's a few of these calls that are hell for the replay judge. I'm talking about with 14 cameras because, you know, so take us through. So I think that they can do tenths of points because they've got a better judging system. I'm just being frank.
Good. And here's the deal on the judging system. For years, Kendra, you remember this too, and Tommy, you will too. For years, it was six, seven of us had them all. And you didn't have hardly anybody ever get a chance to come up and do them. You know, there was not very many rollovers, you know, where our system now is we got, I think we have 27 that can do the big events and they're doing excellent. And after every bull riding, we have film. And I mean, it's called Greenfly. And I'll go down through them numbers and I'll say, okay, you're an outlier. Tommy, you have him 90. Everybody else has him 87. Okay. And then I say, go compare that ride to your other 90 the day before. Yeah, I mean, it works so good. And you can just hit just them two rides and compare them for your brain. And then in every ride we go through, and then if just like our 88s, you know, if you got a ton of 88s, I'll hand pick them out of there and say, okay, pick them out. Don't matter what day it is. And say, look at them four 88s and tell me how you got them. And then undoubtedly they'll come back. Oh, hell yeah. I can see why I could have broke that up. And that's progress.
Which,
and they're all really good about it.
Nobody's against progress. I think that's great. And I just think I will say, to be fair for rodeo, you know, making that much progress in one event is a different beast than trying to get somebody to be great at judging as many events as our rodeo, right? Yeah.
Right, right.
To be fair or whatever.
But we don't change much. I mean, I'm really glad. I'm interesting with Alan. I'm glad they're going to quarter points at the NFR.
Me too.
I understand what Mr. Davis says, but Mr. Davis remembers it the way he wrote it. He wrote the scripts. Everything's exactly how he did it forever. But again, you better get good enough to get better, because people start to see when they watch the Olympics and it's in 0.9s, 0.7s, and we're going to compare ourselves to other pro sports. We got to get there, don't we?
Yeah. Okay. So here's another thing that came up yesterday. So last night I talked to longtime NFR secretary, Sonny Deb Backstrom, to confirm that at the NFR, the top five guys in the world standings are the last five guys that ride in the rough stock events. And so I, by the way, over the weekend asked Sean Davis about that. And he said, the reason that we went to doing that is because to keep the crowd engaged.
So
now it sure seems to me like a huge advantage. If you're the world leader and you get to go last every night, is that not just an absolute huge advantage? I can't believe that the 6th through 15th guys would think this was cool.
Okay, Kendra, let me address it. And that's a time event attitude, right, that you have, because, you know, you got a lot of play in that. But them rough stock guys, they're competing against the animal. It doesn't matter if they go first.
You don't think that it's a big advantage?
No. I tell you what, for years we used to start with a buck off.
It shouldn't be, but the truth is they don't have enough good judges. So, Kendra, you're right
that you're it isn't an advantage.
The first guy screwed, and it's an advantage to go to the end. But the problem, Kendra, in my opinion, and we'll ask Alan, is that if these guys were judging at the level that the PBR guys are judging at, no offense to anybody, right? But if they were doing this, then it wouldn't matter because what they earned is what they earned, regardless of when they play.
I understand that. It's just there's also part of an announcer's job, correct me if I'm wrong, is to sell it at the end. You build this hype to the end. Can he hold on to first in the average? Can he keep his lead in the world? Every night, the number one guy in the world goes last, and there's a huge hype. Now, that should not impact what a judge says, right?
Not. But
judges are human.
Yeah, true.
I don't know.
And it's also interesting.
It's a great conversation, guys, because it's all true.
It's
it really
inside
is.
Of knowledge here. But
You got to bow up and pay attention to not that shit. You know what I'm saying? You got to pay attention to what you're doing.
But, you know, rough stock guys, the good rough stock guys now, they know to become the announcer's friends. I see this happening all the time because they want the announcer telling everybody, including the judges, how good they are before they nod.
Yeah.
And then they want them telling them how good that ride was when they nod.
Oh my God. Don't get me started there.
But that's the judging for you
and announcing. There's nothing more worse.
I agree with that, but that's the announcer's job, as Kendra said. However, and these really good roughies, I watched them in my entire career. The guys that are standing there talking to the announcers, I just chuckle, right? Because they got zero in common with most of those announcers.
Right.
Like that's very strategic and smart to play that card if you're going to play it. But the truth is, there's not very many judges in pro rodeo. There's a handful. There's some that are so qualified, Kendra, that this
fired.
Does. When you speak,
I can name you five
your
or six.
Mind and, when you speak your mind and want stuff straight, sometimes you get the walking ticket.
True.
So I think it's a problem. And the only other thing I'll say, Kendra, because I'm talking a lot here because I'm passionate about this, maybe if they paid judges what they were worth to do their jobs correctly, we would get good judges.
That was a question on my list. Is there enough money in it to be able to recruit, legit high-end judges?
I don't think there's enough money in it for the PRCA guys. When you get paid more to high school rodeo than they do, that's bad. That's bad.
Okay, Alan, can a great judge be trained, or does he have to have lived it to see it in slow motion?
I think that's a great question. We take advantage of our upbringing, but you got some guys that can be trained. I do, if they're open, they got the right attitude, and they recognize the criterias and everything. I see it. I see that. That's good. They're clean. And if they got the right personality and integrity to follow the rules, doesn't matter if it's who it is. I'm sorry. Love you to death, but no, not today. I think they've got that. If they got that down, I think you can succeed at anything you want to do in rodeo.
Well, I would say, Kendra, if you look at the most successful football coaches ever, they weren't that good of players, but they were really good at noticing all the details.
All the details,
the bigger picture that they see. And sometimes these judges, it sounds like I'm bashing judges. So if you're listening to No Spin and you're a judge and you want to throw a dartboard, I'm not saying that. But I'm just saying, if you have, sometimes that can impact you. And my point is, and I've said this to other people that have asked me the same question, I said, well, then how do you explain these coaches that were really terrible football players? Like they, on the field, they were not very good, but they know the game inside and out and how to win. And I think, Alan, couldn't that apply to a judge?
Yes. Yes.
There's the old saying, there are those who can do and those who can teach, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's just like the bulldogging. If you when you're flagging, you're judging, you're making that run yourself. Every run, so you're in it. You're in the game. I don't care that bombs can go off, but when he's catching his steer and throwing them, and you're waiting for the legs to clear and stuff, it's all going through your body to win. To when you flag him.
I have a question from each end of the arena. For your opinion, do you think the markout, we should continue to have a markout rule? There's starting to be people talking, yes, we should, no, we shouldn't. What do you think?
Well, I've got to do both. I'll just give you an example. They didn't have it at the Hondo, but your judge who doesn't mark them out, he's going to dock you. Right. So, I mean, it's either way. And then forever, when I was flanking and stuff, were so hard on the mark out that they rough locked them horses and they'd get stolen and everything, you know, so they got that point. So to free, but I think the way I'm going to go back some generations here, the Joe Alexanders and them that have it down, you know, that helps them in their ride to make that 23, 24 point spur ride. I don't think your timing, a lot of times it takes you a jump and a half, two jumps to catch up, you know? So I really think it enhances the judges out there. It helps you, you know?
Okay. At the other end of the arena, mm-hmm. What do you think? I feel like I keep hearing that I was going to ask about the crossfire rule and what you think about it. One thing I have been told a lot in recent times is that they're letting it slide more. I don't know if you have any inside intel on that, but I don't know if they got tired of fighting it, but what can you say about the crossfire?
They taught me the crossfire. And I don't know, it was the top 15 or 20 that came to Phoenix that year. They put a video together and it was black and white. You know, it was just black and white and it was easy to call.
It's black and white. You're telling me that that's black and white. Cause I was going to say the two things, if they hired me to be a judge, that I would be scared of. And that's flagging the bulldogging on someone's horse that I don't know gets there. I can't pretend like I missed it. Right.
No,
I mean,
you
drop that flag. You
can't fix the bulldogging.
No,
you screw up the bulldogging. Yeah. But back to your crossfire deal. But now they've the cattle are smaller, not as big. And there's no consistency in it. That's the problem. That's the problem we keep having is there's you're from one judge to the other, what his call is, you know, and there's nothing wrong.
You can make a consistent crossfire call currently without video, with guys positioned, you think that it's black and white enough from where these guys are to make that consistent currently? Do you think that's a possibility?
You see, I haven't got to judge or flag any team roping since I've been gone. And that all come in after. I'm being honest there. Because if I go back and if I do a rodeo or something, it's going to be the same call because you got to be consistent from who you are. You draw your judges just like you draw your animals. When you're riding, you look right out there and say, oh yeah, he likes this type of bull or this type of horse. You know, they know what you got. They know what you like. And a flagger's the same way. I mean, I went to Montgomery one year and we were going down the circuit finals there. And so I'm flagging the team roping and half of our guys are coming from California. We're in the slack and about four or five of them guys from the East, they're not getting around. And finally somebody says, I guarantee you got to get around on this guy. And they go, well, thanks for telling us now. I mean, because about three of them didn't get flagged. You know, the old looking at me, look at me and wave. Yeah, you're still not around. And then California guys, the West Coast guys that knew me, bam, you know, they were getting a good flag because they knew.
Gotcha. Have you ever cussed an announcer for encouraging the crowd to be the judges?
I wrote one up. Find him.
You wiener.
I've got right here on the computer.
Did he hurt your feelings by the crowd booing you?
No. But when he sit there and misleading the crowd, it didn't work. Yeah.
It's a fine, I'm assuming, but what's the infraction? Impacting the competition?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, manipulating the contest, our integrity to the sport, you know.
Is it conduct detrimental?
Yep. Because if you're an announcer, you know better. To say he's supposed to be 90, he ain't supposed to be 90, he's supposed to be 84. That's what the judges said.
I agree with that.
Yeah.
Do judges, if a guy dirty cusses you, because judges are human.
This is good.
Well, I'm saying, if a guy dirty cusses you, are you going to take possibly the opportunity to let him know without speaking the words next time you face off? Or I know this is a silly question because it's person to person, but don't tell me you've never seen it, right?
Yeah, I've seen it. I've been in it. It's all timing. It's all timing, Hendra. And it's a time and a place. Now listen, if he's mad at you and he's holding his breath until it approaches you at the right time, it's one-on-one. Nobody's around. You get it out. But if you're going to do that in public and show disrespect to the business and to the judge and the whole business like that, unacceptable. You know, like okay. We have it in the PBR. If you do it in the PBR, you're gone. You're gone. You're out of the building. None of this spinning it in and not getting fined or whatever. You're gone. That event, yeah. You're good. You're done.
So there's no gray area. There's a line and you cannot cross it. Because the thing about it is, I can see it on the one hand. It's like a judge isn't going to take an ass chewing out in the middle of the arena. That's just embarrassing to everybody. But on the other hand, ultimately the judges basically work for the contestants in a way, right? So I do feel like it's silly when some judges are so hard ass that a guy can't ask an honest, polite, respectful question.
They should be able to. Yeah, they can. You can walk right up there, right up there and stand on the line with you and you can discuss it. Everything's good. Yeah, that's good.
That's cool.
You know, and they can give you, hey, you kid or something like that. You know, you're still good. That's just idle conversation to get through it, you know. But when you come in an aggressive, throwing a fit attitude, does not work.
Yeah, but the flip side of that, I've seen judges do, in fairness to the contestant. I've seen a contestant walk up in a polite manner to ask a question, usually on the timed event end. Yep. And the judge won't look him in the eye, acts like he doesn't have time to discuss it. You know, and I think that you have to reciprocate that willingness to hear his side. Most of them just want to be heard.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yes. And this is a great conversation because you got to have interaction. And you're right. They're paying for the judges as well. You know, and the only problem I see in our whole conversation here is accountability to the judge that consistently messes up. That's if the contestants knew, hey, that guy's going to get in trouble or that guy's going to get reprimanded or whatever. It's easier to go with. You know what I mean? Especially like I tell them, hey, we have to make, I'm just going to guess, 1,000 decisions at a rodeo. You get to make 5. Back in the box, turn your horse around, get your horse right, nod your head. You see? So, I mean, you got to, it's lopsided a bit, but you got to respect the contestants. I do. And if you're always in that bind, you lose a little respect from me, you know? But you're trying your butt off and there's a mistake, the judge needs to raise his hand and that contestant will take it a lot better, you know? They say, hey, I screwed you on that one. I am so sorry. You know, they'll go, hey, well, thanks. And at least you know. How many times have you walked out of there and the judge won't admit it? That's almost gone in our system nowadays. In the old days, they were like, I didn't make a mistake. I'm the judge, you know.
So well, and judges earn respect.
Yes.
And I've even seen some PBR judges, frankly, I'm not going to bring them up, that I thought haven't earned what the amount of events that they've got, in my personal opinion,
right?
In history, historically.
Yep.
But I think a judge earns a respect, right? I mean, you, when you were in the arena, those guys probably jacked with you less because you proved you were fair.
Yeah, somewhere along the line. You have to be fair. Yeah.
Alan, to me, where I watched him for so many years have that respect is because he knew what he was doing. If he made a mistake, he would own it or whatever. But if a guy had a question, he would answer the question. And part of that, I think, is confidence. That's just in any job. If you have the confidence in what you're doing, if you made a mistake, you made a mistake. You didn't do it on purpose. You didn't do it to screw somebody.
You want to hear the greatest story ever? Greatest story ever. We're at San Antonio. It's a short go. Jason Miller's up. I'm flagging the bulldogging. He throws his steer, and when he goes by me, I swear he's down. I say, get him up, right? And he gets him up, throws him down, and then I back over in the corner, and I watch it, and they play it like 5 times for like 6 minutes, and they boo me because this steer is that high in the air, right? And he goes all the way to Tucson for the slack the next day. Cost him winning the whole deal, you know? And I'm saying, God, Jason, I'm sorry. You know, that was stupid. I don't know what happened there. So he runs his steer down to Tucson, long score. He goes to get down, and all them assholes say, get him up! They were just teasing him, you know, because he just lost San Antonio because of a stupid-ass flagger. You know, but you got to ante up and say that. I learned a lot from that right there. You know, learn how to sit there and say, hey, I'm telling you, I messed that one up. You know, for years, you'd never get that. You would never get that.
Yeah.
That is a point of respect.
So I got a couple of questions for you. Put aside acronyms and associations. What can our sport do better, particularly in rodeo, but maybe even in the PBR, to continue to improve, right, on all of this? Like if you had to pick a couple things that you notice all the time now that you're out of rodeo, let's pick on rodeo just because you're looking at it from outside now, right?
Yeah.
What's a couple things that could be done in your opinion that would have some instrumental impact on, you know, the right scores and the right times?
I think Kendra touched on it a little earlier, confidence. And you had to build confidence as experience. And so it's like our new guys that are coming up in the PBR, it's not classroom. Part of it is, but it's not classroom. It's come there and shadow. Come there and shadow the event, write your scores down and send them into us. And then we go through them and say, all it is confidence in your in experience. I think, and that's what the rodeo business needs, is somebody not telling them, showing them. Because half the time you're telling them, they get, you know, you're kind of attacking them. You're not attacking them. You're just trying to give them the experience to go and get comfortable. And the more you do, the better you should get. You know what I'm saying? And that's how we've been doing it. Jack and Paul and I, we let them come shadow, you know, and don't think he's right over there once your numbers, because then you know where you're at. You know, and then they do. They all know where they're at, but it's checks and balances for them, and they're not getting yelled at or being stupid or any of that stuff. You know, they need to have some kind of backing for them judges coming up. They need to have give them experience.
So what's the thing that drives you batty now? One thing when you're watching rodeos or whatever that you're like, over and over again, this drives me batty.
It's probably the scoring. Because I'm looking at the criteria of the animal, which dictate most everything. You can be Casey Fields on a 10-point horse. He makes a great ride, but he's not supposed to be 80, and I'm not picking on Case, you know. But you see that on there. And then you look at, like I looked at one performance of your rodeo last year. In one performance, you had 388s in the bronc riding. I went, okay, are you judging or, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you should be good enough to split them. If they're supposed to be 288s, I get it. You know what I mean? But when I get done, you look at it and we preach that all the time is, you know, Roy Doyle, excellent judge, creepy little guy, but good. But we had
kind
our
of
first
a John
team.
Taylor like judge. He's kind of like John Taylor as a judge.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I call him the troll. He's a good boy, really. But we were at our first team. He had like 13 87s. So I get them all together and I go, okay, Roy, we're at a 13-man jackpot. It sees 13 guys. place him. And he had him perfect. He was looking at it. The game was done. Get rid of it. You know what I mean? And it can't, because all them numbers go out through the year. You know, they go out to your, you know, your total riding scores and all that, because PBR is up on all that crap, you know. It's they're way techie on that. But we know, John's got it where how many times he's on the clock in a year, you know, all that stuff. They keep all them stats. How many times he's been disqualified for the shoot process, you know.
Do you ever think that sometimes in judging, last question and then I'll shut up, but it's fun to me. Do you ever think in judging that sometimes judges are looking for what's wrong in everything instead of what's right?
Yes. I think if you go in with a positive attitude, look for the positives. The negatives are going to jump in you anyway. They really are. But if you can look at that, and I'm going to go with you guys, because I go backward for most people. I look at that ride and I go, that's a 90. I got half of it. I'm going to get my 45 down. You know, and that's how we were raised back then. That's how you did it. And then you go here and you look at your rule books, and then you have 13 criterias in the bull riding that you're supposed to be looking for. There's no way you're going to catch all them unless you have the experience and the confidence. You say, I've been on that type of bull, and he's moving forward, and I know how hard that is for difficulty. I'm going to give him points for difficulty. You know, we had a perfect little deal at the Hondo this last week. What was his name? Caleb? Which one was it, Jolie? The boy that come up, and he asked me, he goes, was that a re-ride? And I go, no, I have him at 20 and a half. Okay. And you know what I'm saying? He felt like, and he was just a good, nice bull, made a couple rounds, just kind of in one spot. Is that a rewrite? I go, no, I have him 20 and a half. Because if he was a 19, it's a rewrite option. That's what we have. And then I'm looking, I look down through there and I'll see how many times Tommy Joe is trying to keep from giving him a rewrite. Oh, you had 14, 19 and a halfers, huh? Everybody else has him 16, 17s, 15s, you know? So then you're protecting that line, which is not good either. But that's all brought up so they know, you know?
Yeah, but you're analyzing scores. Does anybody in the, they may do it, but does the PRCA and does Pro Rodeo, do they have the staff and the infrastructure to be able? I mean, what I'll give hats off to the PBR for spending the money to hire a guy like you that can look at all of this, right? Yeah. But they don't. I don't think they don't have the infrastructure to pull that off, do they?
Well, here I'm going to stick up for the PRCA. Believe it or not, they're trying. They got the Ron, but they don't have the assets. You're right. They don't have the assets, and they're not going to look at Thousand Oaks, California. You know, you might be on the Cowboy Channel at Redding. You might be able to overlook that, but, you know, you got these guys coming around. They're not going to get no feedback. You know, by the time that rodeo's over, it's gone. So here you are. They're kind of lost. They're a boat with no oars. Where ours, I guarantee it, I just did, what was it, Shipshawana, Indiana. We had that this weekend, and them guys shined. I mean, their numbers were perfect, and they had one little mistake. They forgot to put down. They give the guys two rewrite options, but they didn't put them on a sheet. That was their only mark. They forgot to put it down, you know. So it's, but I think for the business of judges coming up, the PBR is so far ahead of everybody because they have the money. They take the time, the initiative, and we have been looking at AI, and they've been experiencing Sean Gleason, and they've been touching bases. It's so far ahead of, it's so far over my head. You know what I mean? I'm the guy that said the clocks won't start off that. There's no way, bullshit, and they made me eat it. You know, so but our thinking, our judging programs, and I don't care if we go to a rodeo. You know, if you're sitting out there and you're hanging out and you got questions, them judges, they're questioning, trying to get better too. They just need to put more into it.
I think there's paces where, because I was listening to Casey Jones and some people, there's pieces of AI that I think work.
Yeah.
Where numbers are data driven. But I also read an article just recently that talked about these robots of Elon Musk's doing surgery.
Hey.
And they never miss where they're supposed to cut. But everything else that a human notices, right? I'm pretending like I'm a doctor, but I'm let's say it's blood flow or whatever, right? You're never going to get it perfect, I don't think, Alan or Kendra, with AI or a computer. But I think there's pieces of it, like how high or how fast the bull moved or the horse. Yep. That's a data thing, you know. His torque is data driven. Right. Yeah. You don't have to guess how much weight he put on your arm or how heavy he was, because that can be proven. So, yeah, I think humans have to be in the mix. I just do.
I do. I do, too. I do. Then I really do. Yeah. You got to have that human side to it.
Well, Kendra, I'm going to let you. Did you get through all of your whopper questions? I think I got through most of mine.
I do think that it would be fun just for the heck of it. There's only been 100-point score in rodeo history. Wade Leslie, Central Point. Wolfman, October 6, 1991. Is there such a thing, Alan, as a 100-point ride?
I don't believe so. Because Bull didn't do his job. He didn't buck the guy off.
That is such a simple, valid point right there.
He has one job
to do. So if a bull's a 50, the guy can't be there.
Huh? Yeah, he can.
If the bull's a 50, then the guy, right.
He won't be riding because he did his job. The bull won.
Right.
Like, yeah. Okay. And get back to the 100-point ride. Nice try. And you're going to lie. I got a great story on this if you guys want to hear it. Probably Troy Dunn's supposed to beat him the next rider out on Outlaw. Very next rider out. He goes, okay, I guess I can't win first. He gets on and disperses Outlaw and Great Bull Ride. Anyway, Russell Davis, I hope he's listening, was judging. Anyway, Jack Hanum calls me. And he goes, hey, will you judge with Russell at Roseburg? And I've known Russell was raised with me, right? I go, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure I will. And so after every ride, bareback ride, bronc ride, and bull ride, Bobby Christian's on the rodeo, I'd walk up and go, Russell, I'm 39. You're not 50, are you? It was bad. It was terrible. But, it was.
To me, honestly, I've never been on the back of a bull, but it's like, Wolfman was a lightweight and everybody wanted him. And, you know, he was that electric fun, whatever. But I think of like Ty and Cody Custer and those guys, they just couldn't wait to lick in their chops because he wasn't going to back them off. And then I'm like 100 on Wolfman. It was just like, wow.
Now, I mean, I'll give you an example. And you guys were there the night Cody Custer rode him at the finals and Troy Dunn rode the Brennel. Don't know what happened there, guys, but then it had big check marks on these evaluations now. Because not even close. By criteria. No, speed didn't get the win there. You know.
Yeah.
Based on degree of difficulty.
Yes. Degree of difficulty, yep.
Well, so I'm not going to open this can of worms, but it's always a fun one to open. I get asked because of my time with the PBR, best bull riders ever. We have all had that question. The only thing that I'll say that I say, and I won't answer that. Now, one of my favorites, because of my respect for him, was Adriano. Like, Adriano, absolutely, to me was one of my favorites. Not saying he was better. I mean, you had McBride. But here's what I tell them, and I'm going to ask you if you would put anybody else in the top five. I put Denny Flynn in the top five in my lifetime that I've ever seen. Would you have anybody in the top five that someone might not think of?
John Quintana.
See, I don't remember Quintana. Do you, Kendra?
No, I was too.
Every rank bull that they couldn't ride, Quintana rode. Listen to this. I'm at LaFue's house in Quintana, cracks back out. He's been off, I don't know, 3-4 years. He hadn't been riding. I think he's selling cattle for Survey or something. He enters Tulsa. It's the first time that Harry Vold buys sevens. He goes, I got this bull 777. He's telling us, you know. So he goes down there. He's 90. He calls us up and he goes, I just rode one of the rankest bulls I've ever rode. We go, bullshit. You know, you rode almost every rank one. He goes, no, seriously. We didn't even know what sevens was. It wasn't 2 months later. We're going, holy cow, that's the one he rode. You know, that guy was, it was all there. And there's so many through them generations. And here's the next thing that we don't look at. Most of the time, the PBR, I'm not taking nothing away from them because they get on the rankest bulls consistently, right? Day in and day out. But they get to get on the same, say, 74 degrees in an indoor arena, same buck and shoot, no snow, no mud, no different deliveries. It's all where in the old days, they got in the mud, you know, the left hand, right hand delivery, whatever you had at the rodeo, you had to get on that bull. You know, so they went through a lot of elements that was different. You know, but PBR, these guys that are getting on PBR, they're getting on buckers.
Well, they and you are, also and it, don't have to guess. You don't have to guess what you're getting on, because if a bull changes his trip, back when I was in the PBR, if he gets a little wishy very long, he's gone.
He's gone.
And you know what you're getting. Now, you know you're getting ranked. I'll give you that. But when you crawl down over a horse or a bull, that you don't know which two trips he's going to have.
Yeah.
Boy, that's got to be, I would think, the hardest, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But Denny Flynn, you hit Denny Flynn. There's a handful of that I'm just trying to go back through and think of that are just fantastic. You know, I'd really like to see him in this day and age. And here's the next thing I put in this equation is you, in our era, you would ride 5 or 6, 7 hunks of crap. It gets you riding bad, and all of a sudden, here comes your good bulls. It takes you 2 or 3 to get the riding good. As soon as you get the riding good, you get back on 2 or 3 more pieces of crap, and you go, it's one of them deals, you know, where it's here, you get the riding here on these bulls, you got your game on.
Well, I produced the Extreme Bulls Finals in Pendleton, and I told Kendra this, and I don't know that Kendra agrees with me. Best set overall, I could have picked out about 5 guys I could have done without. Best set of overall PRC bull riders I've seen in a long, long, long time.
They're doing
and
good.
Definitely in the bronc riding and the bronc riding. Like, absolutely. I just think, now, I'm not saying that there hasn't been greats along, but as a whole, the bareback riding crop, we're do you healthy. Agree or disagree?
No, I think we're healthier. We're healthy. We've been in 15, 20 years of contestants for the PRCA. I think the bull riders are riding good. They're bareback. Well, I'm so glad to see bareback. For years there, hell, we'd be having bareback riding. You know? You know, we got a pretty good load of them. And then bronc riders, they never go away. they last forever.
They do. No, all right. Well, we're running into the back of it. I wanted to, Kendra, any last thoughts? Otherwise, I'll close it off. Alan, I just want to say, the amount of respect I have for you is incredible. And that's, you know, that's not BS if I wouldn't say it. It's the truth. One of my longtime, this is the real deal. And, you know, they need more like you. And I appreciate you for the human you are. I appreciate you for standing up for what's right and always doing what's right. And you're truly the top of the line.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys. I'm blessed.
Cheers, Keller.
I am blessed. I'm blessed to be, you know, I am for my life and the people I've met and everything else. I'm very blessed.
Aren't we blessed? We can sit here and talk about all of the things that are wrong. Could you not pick a better, the relationships in our sport and the people that give and help and the brotherhood and sisterhood that we have in this? It's unmatched.
You know, You know, I got to go to the Hondo, and it was a hell of an event. It was fantastic. And, you know, my top deal, and I told Jolie this, was I got to see everybody I haven't got to see in 4 or 5 years. I did. Them bulldoggers and their jacking with me, trying to get on my horse. And I mean, I got to see people I haven't got to see if I've missed. I've missed them, you know, judging or not. I just wanted to be around them, you know. That's the best thing about it.
They have missed you too. Thank you. That's for sure.
Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you for joining us. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Kendra.
No, you're good. I second what you say. Alan earned his respect over a lifetime. We're slowly putting together
kind of our hardcore roundtable we're going to do sometime, right? We're picking out our guests that are the right ones for this hardcore roundtable. I'm talking about 8 or 10 of them. And boy, oh boy, you fit in there. It'll be a fun one.
Okay.
All No Spinners, if you don't know him, look him up. The best there's ever been. Still very good. Still killing it in the PBR. This has been episode 84 of No Spin Rodeo. We hope you learned something. We thank you for joining us. By the way, if you want some comments or something, we can get Alan back on. But if you want to send us some feedback, remember you can text that at 817-668-2395, or you can email us at nospinfeedback@gmail.com. I hope you didn't write that down, Jordan, or Jolie didn't, because I know you'll be the guy that's sending us stuff just to throw us off.
Yeah, you're right.
Thank you guys for joining us. We'll see you next Tuesday. Everybody have a blessed day.